selected by citizen scientists, by real scientists, and actually getting the conservation lessons out of that data. So Sylvia, over to you.
Thank you. Can you hear me? Thank you for coming to this lecture. So this morning I'm going to talk about the Southern African Butterfly Conservation Assessment Project. In short, it's the Butterfly Atlas Project. As Les said, I've managed this project for the last 5 years or so. This is a very good example of a citizen science project. We had a huge amount of citizen scientists participating, so I'm just going to give you a basic overview of what the project is about, some basic results, and just to show you how citizen scientists have contributed so much to this project, and without them this would really not have been possible. Okay, so why did we decide on butterflies out of all other insect groups? So firstly, they're one of the most diverse orders of insects. They're also a good indicator group of ecosystem quality. They're attractive and colorful, and they fly by day, so it's easy for you to observe them, and you like them a lot. So they're popular with the public. We have a huge amount of amateur knowledge. We've got the Lepidoptera Society of Africa, which is the main branch is based in Johannesburg, but they've got branches also here in Cape Town and in Durban. And they've got so much knowledge. So they were one of our partners. They're quite easy to identify. We've got quite a few field guides out there. And also here in South Africa, we've got quite a high diversity of butterflies. About 17% of Africa's butterflies occur in our region. So just to quickly show you why butterflies are important to us. Well, firstly, they are important for pollination. And for instance, the Table Mountain Beauty, which you may have seen flying around here in, I think it's around autumn, it's the only known pollinator of the red Disa orchid. So without this butterfly, that plant would die out. And this butterfly also pollinates other red flowers, but this particular plant needs this particular butterfly. So we have those kinds of plant-butterfly relationships. We also have interspecific relationships. For instance, this butterfly here, the Brenton Blue, which you've probably heard of, which is a very critically endangered butterfly in Knysna, has special relationships with a particular species of ant. It needs these ants to complete the life cycle. If those ants are absent, then this butterfly will also die out. So we have quite a lot of butterflies, the small little blues and the coppers, who have specific relationships with ants. So as you can see, they've got very important, they've got a large amount of importance in the environment. So what is SAPCA? Okay, it was basically a four-year project. It started in April 2007 and ended about a year ago, but we're still busy editing the book. It's such a huge book, so we're actually still busy with that. It was a three-way partnership with the South African National Biodiversity Institute. They provided the core funding for the project, and they received most of that funding through their own partnership with the Norwegian Ministry of the Environment. Our second partner was the Lepidoptera Society of Africa. This is a society of amateurs, also citizen scientists, and they, as I said, they just know so much, and without them, we really would not have gotten off the ground. And then, obviously, the third partner was us, the Animal Demography Unit here at UCT, and we were responsible for managing the project. So what were the two main aims of the project? Were to increase understanding of the diversity and distribution of butterflies in the Atlas region and to provide for effective conservation assessment and planning. So how did we go about doing this? So the two main objectives was firstly to create a comprehensive database of butterfly distribution records. For the Atlas region, and I must just say the Atlas region is South Africa, Lesotho and Swaziland. So how did we do that? The main part of our database consists of records from existing collections, either with the private collectors, who are LEPSOC members, or else from collections in museums around South Africa and also a couple outside of South Africa. Secondly, we conducted a few field surveys to get current day data. Then we launched an online virtual museum. This tool was launched firstly for the Reptile Atlas, and it was quite popular, so we decided to use it. And this is where members of the public, like yourself, can take photos of butterflies, submit it to our online website. We have a panel of experts that identify the butterfly for you, so you get to know what that butterfly is, but in return we get the locality point for that particular record, and that will go onto our maps. So, and I'll be talking about all these a bit more as well. And then the last thing, we also in the last year of SAPCO, we started a butterfly census to try and follow in the footsteps of Britain and the US. So I'll go into greater detail about that in a short while. Our second main objective is to produce an Atlas and Red List. This is this book that we've been editing for about a year now. It's going to have maps for all our species and subspecies, which we have 793 of. And they will all have been assessed with regards to their risk of extinction according to the IUCN procedure. So we've got an updated red list for all our butterflies. The first red list was done in 1989, and the second one in 2009, which is quite recent. But even though that is quite recent, from what we've done now, which is based on more comprehensive data, that list has changed a little bit, even in a couple of years. So it just shows how important it is to have all this data into one big database so we can produce proper and accurate results. So firstly, the database. I know this is a huge table, but I just want to show you that we've got just over 300,000 distribution records of butterflies in our database. A lot of them, as you can see, are from museums and institutions. Most of the museums in South Africa gave us their data. We also got some data from the National History Museum in London, and we got some data from the African Butterfly Research Institute in Kenya. Then, of course, the Lepidoptera Society of Africa, you can see that they contributed about a third of the database. And as I said, these guys are amateurs, they're citizen scientists, and this is a huge amount of data. The field surveys, 25,000 records. The virtual museum at that time was 12,000 records, which is also a lot of photographs from people, and then a few other odd things. The field surveys, these were conducted within each province, and they were coordinated by LEPSOC. We obviously had to obtain all the necessary permits from Nature Conservation, SANParks, DWAF, and private forestry companies, etc., to allow us to go and collect there. In the end, we had about 62 LEPSOC members who went out into the field to help with the surveys. And we only managed to do surveys in 3 years. That's all we had time for. And the surveys were guided by a thing that we call gap analysis. So if we plot what we have already, we can see where the gaps are. So we'd ask the guys, please go to the gaps to try and get new information from those gaps, so we can get a more rounded idea of where the butterflies are. And from this, from these surveys, we got very good records in some cases for species range extinctions, where their ranges either grew or shifted, new species localities where we didn't know that a particular species occurred, even new species or subspecies. And we got very good data for some of our rare species. So that was a very valuable exercise. This is now, I'm going to talk about the virtual museum. So as I said, this is where members of the public take photos. And nowadays it's so easy with a digital camera, and it's so much fun. You can take 100 photos of one butterfly and you don't have to pay a fortune to have it, you know, all developed like in the past. So it's really so much fun. And so basically this is the web address. The virtual museum is still continuing through LEPSOC, so if you are interested, please, you know, participate. We need as many people to send in photographs, and that is the website. And then you need to click on the SAPCO logo and just follow instructions. So basically, one can search for a particular species. You will get a thumbnail of butterfly records, and if you want to see that particular record, you can click on that. You can get extra information there, the where it occurred, the coordinates. You can get a better view of that butterfly. You can click in there and you'll get a better picture of that butterfly. And then you can also get distribution maps for a particular species. So this is the map for this species. So as more data gets put in, these maps get updated. And you're also able to view your own particular map. So if you want to see where you've been all over the country, we produce those maps. So we've got one guy, Chris Willis, who's submitted thousands of records into the virtual museum. And if you look at his observer map, he's got dots all over the country. So, and it's just great. And then the last thing, this is what we started about 2 years ago, is the biannual butterfly census weeks. So the point of, in the US and in Britain, they have now been conducting butterfly censuses for at least 30 years. And these occur regularly every year in the same locality. So they've got this long-term data sets of butterfly records. And with these long-term data sets, you can compare that to climate, like temperature or rainfall. And now, you know, everyone's talking about climate change. One can look at the possible effects of climate change on butterfly distributions. And what they found in Britain, for instance, is that the butterflies, as things are getting warmer, the butterflies are starting to move closer to the poles. So this kind of census data helps to monitor populations and can provide a lot of valuable information. So we've now had four censuses already. The next two are coming up for this year, number 5 and 6, in April and in October. So the April one, we call it like an autumn census, and then the October one is a spring census. You can register on the LEPSOC website. They're also continuing with this into the future. So basically the idea is that you choose a particular locality that you want to survey biannually into the future. It could be your garden, it could be a park close to you, it could be a nature reserve, whatever. And then during these weeks, you need to observe that particular locality for at least 6 hours and note down all the butterflies you see and count them. If you don't know what they are, take photographs and submit them to the virtual museum, and our experts will identify them for you. So what we are trying to build up is these long-term data sets, as in the US and Britain. So we can also start looking at what are the impacts of climate change here in South Africa. And we may expect to see that our butterflies start moving southwards towards the pole to get to cooler weather, or even higher up in altitude to get to the cooler weather up on the mountains. But we don't have enough data yet because it's only been 2 years. We need at least about 10 years of data before we can start looking at those patterns. But this is just a summary of results of the first four censuses. We've seen the most number of species in KwaZulu-Natal and in Mpumalanga and Limpopo. The areas on the eastern side of the country have a much higher diversity of butterflies because it's more tropical. But here in the Western Cape, we've also seen quite a bit. But I think this is also more related to how many teams have participated. And we see there's a lot of teams from KwaZulu-Natal in the Western Cape. We've had no one from the Northern Cape, very little from the Free State, very little from the Eastern Cape, very little from all of these. So we've actually had the best participation from the Western Cape in KwaZulu-Natal. So we're trying to get more provinces involved, more people from these provinces involved, so that, you know, the trends will be more meaningful once we start to look at them. The most common butterfly seen during each census, we can see in the first census was the African monarch, the next two was the citrus swallowtail, and the last census last year was the painted lady. So there's no definite patterns yet. Here we see the next most common butterflies were the common zebra blue, then the painted lady, African monarch, citrus swallowtail. So some of these keep on repeating, and you know, the citrus swallowtail is very common butterfly. It's the ones that you see flying around your citrus trees or your orange trees. And the painted lady is very common. So these, it's quite obvious that we are picking up the common species, but even these might give us indications of change in the future, because they may also be impacted by warmer weather. Here, what I'm trying to show you, this is my census. I conduct my census at Assasigh Bush near Jonkershoek every time. So I just want to show you, give you a visual example of what kind of data you can get. So for instance, here, the African monarch, we see that it's mainly an autumn butterfly. It only occurred in that autumn period and that autumn period, but not during spring. As well as with the Cape Autumn Widow, it doesn't occur in October. But when we look at the Painted Lady and the Citrus Swallowtail, it's the opposite. It occurs in spring, but not in autumn. So we're picking up seasonal effects. But then there's other butterflies, like the Garden Acria, or the gold spot itself, they occur all the time. It's just the numbers that differ, but they're always there. So eventually, when we've got a huge amount of data, we can extend this graph for 10 years or 20 years and then see what's happening. Okay, just quickly, to summarize all the data we've got in our database, the virtual museum, this is where the public sent us photos, contributed 3% of our total database, and that is quite a lot. Those photographs covered a quarter of our Atlas region, and we got data for 60% of our species. So I think that's an excellent result, and we have also, through the virtual museum, received very important butterfly records, the same as for the field surveys. We've got records for critically endangered species, we've got records showing that some butterflies are moving southwards. We've got records of range extensions. So the public is most definitely contributing to valuable information. And one other way that they are contributing is that what we found is that the collectors in the Lepsok Society, they didn't collect common species like the African monarch or the citrus swallowtail. But if you speak to them, they say, no, it's a common butterfly. It occurs all over South Africa. And we plot the map with the data that we have, and there's gaps everywhere. So everyone assumes it occurs everywhere, but we don't have the data. So this is one important thing about the virtual museum, is that we've got a lot of photos of these common species. So we're slowly starting to fill in the gaps for these common species. And it may end up that it doesn't occur anywhere. We may find that it doesn't occur in the Northern Cape because it's too hot. But, you know, people just assume things now because they sort of generally see it everywhere. So this is all, you know, this is why even photos of common species are very important to us. data from existing collections from the museums and the private collections contributed 90% to the database, covered 2/3 of the Atlas region, and we got data for all our species. So that was the main chunk of data that we got. Yeah, I'd just like to show you this map plots all the data in our database. So you can see we've got still a huge amount of gaps in the Northern Cape, the Free State, and the Northwest. The more green the block is, the more number of records from that area. So you can see that a lot of records are centered around urban areas where people live and where areas are most accessible to people. If we remove old records and we plot it from 2007 onwards, when our project started, we see the gaps going all over. We just don't have enough people to go out there and to get current data. So it's almost impossible to get full coverage for current data, but this is why we encourage people to citizen scientists to participate through the virtual museum and through the butterfly censuses. Because slowly but surely, with people participating from all over the country, we'll be able to fill in all these gaps, and slowly but surely we'll be able to get a better picture of what's currently happening out there. So we did the red list, as I mentioned, according to the IUCN criteria, and this is now the final red list. We have 3 extinct butterflies. 2 of them went extinct in the 19th century. They've never been seen again. Another one went extinct quite recently, here in Lion's Head, there were too many fires, so it died out. We've got 60 threatened species. This is quite high. 14 of them are critically endangered. That is very close to extinction. And of these, 5 have not been seen in a long time, so we think there are another 5 that could be possibly extinct. 27 are endangered, and 19 are vulnerable. So we need to keep a careful look out for these species. The Lepidoptera Society is starting a program called Coral, where it encourages its members to go out and monitor all these species, so we can make sure that, you know, if things start going very bad for them, we can pick this up and do something, maybe go to conservation and ask them to help protect the particular habitat. Letsock has already proclaimed 4 nature reserves just for butterflies, and they've done an amazing job. 5 of our species are near threatened. Another 9 are data deficient. That is, we don't have enough information about them, so we can't say if they're threatened or not. We don't really know where they occur or what. So Lepsoc is also going out, focusing on these 9 to try and get more data to see if, so we can red list them. And we found that 90% of our butterflies are least concern. So it's not too bad. With the rate of habitat destruction, this number could very rapidly become smaller. Of the least concern, 76 of our butterflies have been flagged as rare. So this means that they might occur in a very tiny area, like a hectare or something, on a mountaintop. But because it's so isolated on the mountaintop, there's no threats at the moment, or no potential threats in the future. So even though it's quite rare, it's not really threatened. It's quite happily surviving there, as it has for hundreds of years. But we have flagged it as rare, so the conservation authorities can take note that, you know, they've got a particular rare species close by, and just make sure that no one goes and tampers with its habitat up there on the mountain or wherever it is. We also analysed what are the main threats for our threatened species, and we found that it's habitat loss. The main one is through agriculture and forestry, and then it's urbanisation, and then through mining and industry. So then also the second most important threat is habitat degradation, and the most important one in this category is an inappropriate fire regime. So as I said, that butterfly in Lion's Head, the fire regime, the fires happen too often. Fynbos, I think, only needs to burn every 7 years or something like that, but it was happening much more often than that, and the butterfly couldn't keep up with that, and the food plant couldn't keep up with that, so the butterfly died out. Introduced alien plants, we see them all over the show, that's taking over all the natural vegetation, and then alteration of herbivore roles. I think that means where there's livestock grazing. Anthropogenic environmental changes. Climate change is starting to become important. I think we'll only see that in a 10 or so years' time. But some of the guys reckon that that's already happening. And a little bit of pollution. And not the threat of removing butterflies from the wild through collecting. We didn't find that to be a threat at all, because the guys do follow a particular code of conduct and they can only collect so many. And the butterfly's life cycle, it does manage with that. So we didn't find that was a threat. Just to show you the value of this data now, once we plot all our threatened taxa onto a map, that's your critically endangered, and vulnerable butterflies, we find that the Lacinidae, that's a family of the small butterflies, the little blues and the coppers, they are the most threatened. 83% of our threatened butterflies are in that family. And that's also because they have these relationships with ants, like I spoke about before, and a lot of them occur in very tiny areas, sometimes not bigger than a rugby field. So if a development comes along, that's gone forever. So they are extremely vulnerable. We found that the Western Cape contains the highest number of threatened taxa, and I think that's partly due to all the development and habitat destruction that's happening along the coast. We also found that the grassland biome contains the greatest threatened taxa, that's up there in KwaZulu-Natal in the Midlands and in the Drakensberg. And the fynbos biome is the second most threatened biome. So this is what this kind of data can tell us, and it helps us to focus our efforts. We also produced a map for all our endemics. Endemic species are species that occur only in the Atlas region and nowhere else in the world. Once again, we found that the family Lycaenidae consists of the greatest number of endemics. Western Cape, again, contains the greatest number of endemics. And the fynbos biome, in this case, contains the greatest number of endemics, and then that's followed by the grassland biome. So here in the Western Cape, we live in a very special place. We've got a lot of special butterflies, and we need to be careful about, you know, what goes on, and I think the authorities need to be sure that development doesn't go overboard. The publication, as Les mentioned, is coming out at the end of February, I hope. We've had so many deadlines, but the editing process is quite huge. The book is called Conservation Assessment of Butterflies of South Africa, Lesotho and Swaziland, Red List and Atlas. We have about 8 or 10 editors. The first part has 5 chapters where we discuss methods, where we discuss all the threats to the butterflies. We also discuss what are the future priorities for butterfly conservation and research. And we make recommendations to conservation practitioners and to environmental impact assessors on how to use this book to help them with their putting together their management policies and reports. And then the second part of the book will have the conservation assessment accounts for each one of our 793 butterflies. There's going to be a distribution map for each one, divided into 3 time periods, so you can also get a good idea of how the species has moved over time. We'll have pictures of all the butterflies, so it could help, you know, a little bit with identification. So that's the book. That's hopefully going to be published this year, so keep an eye out for it. Sambi is going to be publishing the book as part of their biodiversity series. So I think one would need to look on their website. Basically, to conclude, the SAPCA project highlights those butterfly species in most urgent need of conservation. It's helped to determine the conservation hotspots for butterflies and their related habitat, for instance, the fynbos and the grassland biomes. And the project outputs will ultimately contribute towards understanding ecosystem health and climate change. So this is almost the end, but I want to thank Sambi for their funding and the Norwegian Ministry of the Environment. We've got a Norwegian here today, so thank you. And SABIF, that's the South African Biodiversity Information Facility, they provided a small grant to help us digitize all these thousands of records in museums, and that was a huge job. We had to employ a lot of data technicians to go around the country to all the museums. We sent someone to Kenya, a lucky person, and they just sat there every day with their computer typing in all this tiny information on the labels. And then we had to assign coordinates to every single record. This was a huge, huge job. The LEPSOC members, of course, they are so passionate about their work. And then, of course, the citizen scientists. And just to give you a good idea, that's really the amount of people and institutions that were part of this project. It's really such a huge team effort. It's not just 10 people. It's a lot. So as I said, LEPSOC is continuing with the virtual museum and with the butterfly censuses. All the information is on their website. I don't know if I gave you the website earlier, but it's www.lepsoc.org www.butterflies.co.za. And then just to give you a taste of how beautiful our butterflies are, so you do go to Lepsok and join and participate, have a look at all these beautiful butterflies. And this one, for instance, is tiny, but look how beautiful. The gold-banded forester. This is Hutchinson's high flyer. The blue pansy. Some of these only occur on the eastern side of the country. The Azu hairstreak, because he's also a tiny butterfly. Gaudy commodore. Mozambique bar. And the pirate. So I hope I've managed to give you a good idea of the project and how valuable the contribution of citizen scientists has been to this project. And yes, I encourage you to get involved with all whatever citizen science projects are out there, because you guys really, really, really provide a lot of valuable information, and we just don't have enough time or manpower to do everything that needs to be done. And I think we all learn from each other, and it's just so much fun. Thank you very much.
But it's time to ask Sylvia a few questions. If you have any questions for Sylvia.
Yes, at the back.
Photography seems to be a very important way of recording and inputting to a database. Can you give us a few tips on how you take photographs?
Sure. It's very difficult. Generally, you need to try and creep up on the butterfly without the shadow going over the butterfly. So you need to just sort of see where you are, where your shadow is. If you've got a zoom lens, the better. Try and get as close as possible, very, very slowly, and then take a lot of shots with your digital camera. It's not always easy. It just comes with practice. What I do, because it's really some of them are impossible and then you just lose that record, what I do is I've made myself a butterfly net and I use a glass jar and I catch it and put it in the jar, take a photo, I hold the bottle up so because a butterfly tends to fly up, and then I just take the photo through the bottom. Hopefully it opens its wings. Sometimes it's also not so easy. And then once I've done that, I let it go. But if you do that, if it's in your garden, that's fine. But if it's in a nature reserve, please just get the landowners, or the permission from the management or whichever landowner, because otherwise you might just get into trouble. But that's the best way for me. But otherwise, you know, a lot of people get amazing photographs with patients and going to the right places, and it's really nice. Yeah.
And I also in the same kind of vein as that. I mean, do you, does the Virtual Museum have interesting records of the larval form?
We do accept records from all forms, even eggs, but that's obviously you really need a good macro lens for that kind of work, and then the guys generally, unless you breed it out, they might not know what it really is. But we've got a lot of photographs of larvae, but it tends to be mainly of moths, but it's and what they do ask is to just, if you do find a caterpillar, you know, try and grow it through to the adult phase, and then record all the life stages, because especially for the moths, we don't know enough. So if one can record those life stages, then we've got that record, and then we know, okay, if that caterpillar is that moth or that butterfly. And we do accept moth photographs as well. They were expanding that to moths, so you know, and that's much easier to photograph.
Does the Virtual Museum accept data outside the census period?
Yes, yes. The Virtual Museum is for any time, anywhere. So yes, you can submit your photos.
I'm sorry, I don't know enough about butterflies, but I picked my ears up when you talked about indicator species and climate change. And one thing about climate change that's evident is that the sooner you can get your information to schools and the like,
is best because it might not take them too long to help you. But if you embark on a 10-year cycle, that's maybe too long for climate change.
Mm.
So what are you doing in terms of school education?
Well, see, we don't have funding. But we have had school participation, you know, through the butterfly censuses. We have had quite a number of school teams participating. And we're hoping, you know, LEFSOC is slowly changing its profile. When I first joined, it was mainly white, middle-aged male men. We're trying to attract more women and obviously younger people. It's not easy with a young crowd, but hopefully with the latest technology, you know, through digital photography and these Facebook pages, and, you know, they love Facebook and whatever, sharing things. Hopefully we can do that. But I think LEFSOC, they do give the odd talk here and there, you know, to schools and various groups, but I don't think there's anything formal for school education at this stage. It's just...
If you can link it with climate change as an indicator species, that might be one way that funds could be
available. I think SAMB is looking at that, the National Biodiversity Institute. That's on their mandate. So I think the ministers would only fund future projects if it's linked to climate change, and, you know, if it has some kind of feedback outputs with regard to the effects on humans. So. But I know that's on the card somewhere along the line. I'm not sure how far they've got with that. But yeah, money is tight at the moment, so.
Yeah. I'm a visitor to the Western Cape, and I've noticed that there's a butterfly farm somewhere in the Cape Town environment. Would you recommend that?
That's Butterfly World near Stellenbosch, and totally I recommend it. Esther van der Westhuizen, she's a LEFSOC member, and she's totally passionate about conservation. The butterflies there are exotic, they're not indigenous, but she does have displays of our project, and it's just a good way to expose children to it. So that's one place where kids can go, and you see all these beautiful big exotic butterflies, and she's got the pupa there, and you can see them hatching out of the pupa, and it's an excellent setup, and I think it's one of the best in the country. So I would totally go there. Yes.
It's close to the farm.
Yes.
Yeah.
could I ask a sort of maybe an unusual question, but you've got alien plants in South Africa and you've got alien birds in South Africa. Are there any alien butterflies?
We've got one, and it's the cabbage white. It's quite common around yet. If you've got nasturtiums in your garden, you'll see them around there. Yeah, and that's what we've picked up even through the virtual museum, is that it's starting to spread eastwards along the coast from Cape Town and northwards along the coast into the Northern Cape. So that's also an important thing to monitor, is how is this alien butterfly spreading and what are the impacts?
Is it interfering with the...
Not yet, no. We haven't found that it's doing anything yet. It's got, there's a wasp that tends to parasitize on the larva quite heavily, so I think that keeps the population in control.
Is that wasp an alien?
I don't know.
This your project is just South Africa, Lesotho,
and Swaziland.
And Swaziland. Mm. What is the connection with the other territories in South Africa?
Well, the African Butterfly Research Institute in Kenya, they're doing a lot of work that's mainly in Eastern Africa. But they do have collections from all over Africa. Then there's a Butterfly Conservation Society in Ghana, and they're focusing a lot of their work in Ghana and West Africa. When we started the project, we did want to include Namibia and a few of the other, Botswana, Zimbabwe and Mozambique, but the scope was too large for the time constraints and the funding that we had. That would have been much too huge a job. But I think now that we've got this baseline database for Southern Africa, we can now expand it into the next level of countries and slowly link up to East Africa and West Africa. And then my next dream is to really produce an atlas for the whole of Africa. But that's an enormous job. There's so many thousands and thousands of collections in museums in Belgium and France and US. But I think, if we work together with the Ghanaian Society and Arbery in Kenya, we can slowly link up and link all our databases together, and I think we'll get there eventually.
Sylvia, with your reputation, you'll make it happen.
In terms of collecting, I showed that picture of the Sandman yesterday, which is in a collection in Moscow. What is the impact of collecting butterflies on butterfly populations? Should it be done?
Well, as I showed on the graph of what were the main threats to the butterflies, at the very bottom there, I showed that collecting was insignificant. So I think basically a lot of butterflies, when they fly, there's a lot of them. As I said, LEFSOC has a code of conduct. They don't just collect everything they see. And now they've also become more conservation-minded. This project has helped hugely to change the mindset from a pure collecting mind frame to, just collecting stuff, to now actually observing and going to new localities and getting data that's important for conservation. And they're quite well aware of not to over-collect the threatened species. And I mean, as a lot of them have pointed out, when you drive with your car, how many butterflies do you kill with your car? How many butterflies get killed by, or moths get killed by these lamps at night? And then they're still around. So they're just, they're typical insects. They do breed a lot, most of them. So at this stage, we don't see that there's an impact from collecting.
You mentioned something about the cold weather or something having, is it good for butterflies or bad? What's the sort of possible impact of climate change on butterfly population?
Well, in Britain, for instance, they've got longer-term data of butterflies. They've shown that as the climate is getting warmer, the butterflies are now seem to be extending their ranges northwards towards the pole, where it's cooler. And some of them also moving higher up in altitude, up mountains. So basically, one can get worried here in South Africa, once they reach Cape Town, where do they go? And once they reach the tops of mountains, where do they go? So it's important to monitor these trends and see, you know, what's going to happen and try and make a plan.
Similar, like the Kuiper trees, I believe they're also moving down from the very hot part for the south.
Yeah. But the patterns aren't that simple. I've read a couple of papers where, you know, not everything's moving northwards in Britain. Some things are moving elsewhere. So it's really a complicated set of things that one needs to look at. Well, we recommend a diameter. You've got a center point. We recommend a diameter of not more than 1 kilometer around that point. But if you want to do a reserve that's a bit bigger than that area, you can. And you don't have to do all 6 hours in one day. You can do 2 hours. You have to do at least 2 hours in one shot. But you can do 2 hours on one day and 4 hours the next day, or 2 hours on three separate days. But as long as you've done at least 6 hours, so we know that you've observed, or probably observed, all the butterflies that occur there. But all the instructions are on the LEPSOC website. And if you've got problems, just email me. Any questions, just email me and I'll help you.
There are butterfly houses in KwaZulu-Natal which have indigenous butterflies. Do you know much about
it? I haven't been there. I think the ones along the coast somewhere. I've actually read somewhere that it's also quite good. It's not the one near Pietermaritzburg, it's somewhere else down the south coast. I think they do have indigenous butterflies, but yeah, I've heard it's also quite good, but I haven't been there.
So as I understand it, these are butterfly houses, and these are all it's local employment, so it's indigenous activity, and they get handfuls of butterflies in as caterpillars. Glasshouse type things in which they grow white indigenous plants, and apparently they provide an amazing experience for the
it's
sort of a new initiative, a new way of creating employment. So,
yeah.
I think on the LEPSOC website you can
it might be, yes.
Yeah.
I think it's that one.
So
it might be that
experience.
One.
You have experience of it. I mean, there is taking on the financial collapse constantly.
But it has changed ownership recently, I think, in the last couple of years. Is it still? Okay.
What's the average lifespan of
some butterflies can live, only live a few days. And others can live up to a year. So it varies, you know, with the species. Yeah. But a lot of them, the larva might, hibernate or whatever through winter and then only come out. So it might hatch in, summer or autumn, and then sleep through winter and then only come out in spring or summer. There's all kinds of things that happen.
Do many South African butterflies migrate, like the Moloch butterfly?
Not as much as that, but we do have, I'm not a butterfly expert, I must say, but the common white, I think it is. Sometimes if you're driving through South Africa, I think it's around October, you might have noticed these huge amount of white butterflies flying all in, I think it's eastwards or northeastwards. And no one really knows why. So that's interesting, but I think that's probably the biggest or the only one migration that we've really got here. Yeah. There are some papers out there where some scientists have either marked a butterfly with a tiny spot of I'm not sure if it's paint or something like Tippex on the wing, but it obviously can't be too much, otherwise it's too heavy and then it won't fly. But I've even come across a paper where they've put tiny microchip-like satellite trackers on a butterfly. I mean, that's amazing. And then they follow the track of the butterfly. So it can be done.
Some countries where they actually track butterflies with radars. So you can actually get radar, which is that good, that you can actually track the individual butterfly. So you can get the exact pattern of movements for some period of time. The mathematicians will actually build those models.
I must just tell you about this fascinating butterfly that I came across in Ghana last year. I went there to a butterfly workshop. And I forget the name of it, but it's a large brown butterfly. It only occurs up in West Africa, but we've got similarly related species here. And these group of butterflies, under the males, under the forewings, they've got certain like feathery organs sticking out which produce pheromones. And this particular species, when we were out one day, the guy was a specialist on the species. He said, come and smell this one. And it smelled just like vanilla. I was amazed. And that's, he called it the vanilla butterfly. And so this male produces this amazing vanilla scent to attract the females. And I never knew that, so it's just amazing. There's so many amazing things with these creatures.
Right, so Leah, thank you very much. Thanks for coming across the Southwest to give us this presentation today. And all the best with your future studies. One day we do hope if you get it right to do a butterfly Thanks.
Not related to the atlas. What triggers the pupa to become an adult? Is it a variable trigger?
What?
The trigger that will make a pupa move into an adult.
Yeah, it can be numerous amount of things, either temperature or humidity, maybe sometimes even day length. So
it could be many things. Okay. If an egg is laid late in autumn, would they sleep through the winter?
Sometimes they do, yes. Sometimes.
Yeah, yet that same one might hatch in spring.
Yes.
Okay.
But you know, you can have lots of fun if you go walk through your garden and look for leaves that have been eaten and put them in a box. Sometimes they don't always go through, but if they do, you know, it's fascinating what you learn. And then you can capture the life stages for us because we don't know it all, especially for moths.
Jane Greenberg. Jane Greenberg is one, and Earl Whiteley is
one. Oh, okay, I've heard of her.